What's going on, guys? Welcome into today's show. I have a great and a repeat guest in Mr. Damian Lupo. I believe I interviewed Damian back in late 2017, maybe 2018. And Damian is somebody who has a very wild ride of entrepreneurship. He has launched and grown over 70 companies from zero to 100 million throughout really a remarkable 25-year journey as an entrepreneur. And as you can imagine, so many highs and lows on this roller coaster of entrepreneurship for somebody who's been in the game for so long. And he really unpacks how he went from zero to seven to a negative net worth to eight to now nine through an amazing company called Frametech. He is an author of 12 published books. He has, you know, been somebody that many individuals look to for startup advice. And ultimately, he's somebody that shares very transparently about the challenges that he personally has experienced, but many other entrepreneurs experience as well. And anybody that can, you know, talk about losing a $20 million portfolio and then through resilience and grit and determination, having a comeback and building a nine-figure business, there's some wisdom in that. There is some, you know, insights that I know can help and serve any individual. And I got a lot of those in today's episode. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy the conversation that Damian and I have. And really, he spotlights a pretty big part of what has allowed him to grow and gain his success back so rapidly through his new business from this idea of the network effect and how that's tied into building a nine-figure company. So I think you will get some great value out of today's discussion. Again, don't forget to check out all the great things that we have for you guys at millionairemindcast.com. And of course, if you are not on my text list yet, shoot me a text at 844-447-1555. You can check out all the other great stuff that we got on the website in the store. But with that being said, let's not waste any more time. Let's dig into Damian's episode right after this quick message.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process. And in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started. Well, I'm excited to welcome back into the show my brother, Mr. Damian Lupo.
Matt, it's good to see you, man. It's been a long time.
Dude, I've had a handful of repeat guests, and it's always fun to kind of hear what has transpired since we last chatted and communicated. I know you had some big stuff going on with EQRP, which we'll talk a little bit more about that. And it seems like everything has been massively successful since then, or maybe not, I don't know, but we will be digging in on that on today's call. But brother, how you doing, man?
I'm doing really great. I'm on the other side of a lot of stuff, and figuring out sort of the difference between success and significance, and sorting some things out that needed to be sorted out. I'm in a really good place, and really excited to share about the journey, not just the moment, but like all this stuff.
It's rare that you get to talk to people that have gone from zero to seven figures, zero to eight figures, and zero to nine figures. And I know you have crossed all of those milestones, and I'm sure it was just smooth sailing, no challenges. You know, you crushed it the whole way to getting there. But obviously, I think we both can agree the reality of entrepreneurship is anything but smooth sailing. So when you launched EQRP, and maybe for those that don't know what EQRP was and is, talk about what has, you know, played out with the launch of that business since you and I connected. And I think you launched it in 2016 and we had kind of connected in early 2017. What is going on with EQRP and how has that been kind of a stepping stone for where we find you at today?
Well, you know, even going before that, just made me think about something. I was spending some time with Robert Kiyosaki about 20 years ago. And I remember he made this comment to me and a bunch of other people, and he said it all the time. He's basically like, you have to go through a process if you want to be successful of going bankrupt at least a couple of times. And I remember thinking, that's like, the stupidest
no, thank plan you.
I've ever. No, I don't want to do that. I'm like, I'm going to skip that part. And guess what? You don't skip that part. There's always going to be pain. There's going to be turmoil. And so I had my process over 20 years of blowing up several times. And so when that got launched back in 2016, EQRP, the retirement plan to help people take control of their retirement, I had this great idea, got some money together. And in it, and when you and I connected, we were in the middle of it. And within a year of that conversation you and I had, ran out of money and basically had to start over. So not only did I go from, I probably had 100,000-ish net worth when we were talking. And then it went from that to negative 50 to 100 because I had to go into debt to try to keep the thing alive and ultimately had to shut it down and start over and reboot and then just grind. And that was hard because I'd already done that a couple of times. And everybody in my world in late 2017, early 2018, basically said the same thing. Every single person said, man, just let it go, walk away, find something else. And I had 132 people that were clients that had said, yeah, I want you to help me set up my retirement account. And there was something in me that said, I'm not going to just walk away from this. There's 132 people that actually said yes, and they're counting on me. And there's some trust there. And so that was hard, and it was the right thing to do. And I had no idea it would lead into other things. And I think that was a great lesson for me and for probably a lot of other people in those crossroads in life.
Talk a little bit about, and I'm just curious, and share what you want to share with how you take a risk in business a lot of times. And when you take risks, oftentimes you're selling other people on your vision, on your service. Sometimes things don't work out, right? Like you said, how did that impact your reputation and how did you rebound from that and rebuild from that?
Well, so back in 2008, I'd been investing for 8-9 years at that point, and I lost it. I went from 20 million to negative 5. And at that point, that was the first time I really wiped out. And I remember in that experience where I sort of thought, if I just ignore it, it'll go away. That didn't work. Hmm. And I wasn't really open with people. I had my ego driving a lot of things. So I was telling people, look, you know what? You just sit back. I'm in charge. And that was the wrong move. So when this happened, literally a decade later, I went to everybody and said, look, I am grinding. I'm trying. I've got ideas. And I went to people in the fall of 2017 when we were out of money. And I said, I have an idea, but I'm going to need some more money. And 100% of the investors, and it was only, I only raised like 700,000. All of them said no. They said, no, we're walking on, we're moving on. And I was like, I'm not quitting yet. So I just kept using my credit card. And so I think really being very open and transparent and just saying, look, here's what it is. I'm doing everything I can think of and I need help. And then letting people say no or yes. And they all said no, but I didn't say no. I'm like, I'm not quitting. That was a big difference from 10 years earlier when I basically just was, you know, strutting my chest and telling everybody I knew everything. I didn't know jack squat at that point. So that was the big difference reputationally. I think that some people were bugged, but I don't think anybody said you're a bad guy. I think they said, well, this didn't work the way that you thought or with the money that you thought it was going to be needed.
Yeah, I think that's a big piece to spotlight, right? Is like as entrepreneurs, as business owners, as we all know, statistically, most don't work out. But there are the few that do. And, you know, oftentimes when you face that turbulence, because every business owner does. I mean, that's just, there's no way around it in entrepreneurship. What I found is kind of those, there's two types of people when, you know, shit gets hard and when things don't go according to plan is they either lay down and they hide and they don't respond and they don't share what they're doing. They don't even try to fix it. And then there are the people who lean in and say, hey, you know, I messed up, or hey, this didn't go according to plan, or hey, this is everything. And they create that transparency and that window or bridge of dialogue, which is, I think, an important thing, right? Like, it's one of the things that most people will experience if you go into entrepreneurship, it's failure. And it's one of those things where, you know, there's going to be times and seasons where you feel like a, and not saying this is the, but you feel like a fraud or a failure. You feel like you're, you know, not doing what it is that so many people believed in you to do. But I also know that those are oftentimes the moments and the chapters of the story that are the beginning of the redemption journeys as well. And it seems like for you, that was one of those things where you were getting the rejection from your investors. And yet that also was what felt like fuel and inspiration to go and redeem yourself and follow forward on this and on this path that you decided to do what next?
Yeah, well, I think what you're talking about has to do with people investing in me and in the individual. There's an idea, but it's all about the person. Why does somebody hand you a check for $10,000 or $100,000 or $1 million? Because they trust you to be a good steward of that money. And this is somebody's life. It's literally their life energy that they saved up, that they worked for. They traded months, years probably for that. And so whenever I take money from somebody and they hand it to me, I take it very personally. And so I've seen a lot of people be very flippant. They're like, oh, I'm raising money. They do a deal, it doesn't work. And it's like, well, I guess it just didn't work. To me, it's like, man, I literally, somebody gave me years of their life and trusted it, put it in my hands. So with the first time, I didn't really get that. And that's why I messed it all up the way that I responded. This last time in 2018, when that happened and things got shut down, I knew what had happened. And there's also a risk. Like there, people, you get that. You said that. There's a risk to this stuff. It's people didn't loan me money and say, okay, you're going to pay me back. They invested in an idea. They invested in me. And then I said, okay, well, here's what it is. Here's reality. Here's the truth. And here's everything I've done. And here's what I'm going to do. And man, people have been really, I think they've been very respectful of that. And they appreciated that openness. And I've had people, I had one guy I was talking to yesterday, and I loved the conversation. I had to tell him some bad news. I'm like, look, this deal, this technology thing, which I think you probably know about in the worlds that we run in.
Yep.
This thing is not going well. It's a big mess. And I said, there is a realistic possibility that all the money is going to get lost. I said, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm just, we're grinding. I'm going to lose $750,000 of my own money in that thing that I put up. I said, I am working, even though I expect to lose my money, I'm working to try to get yours back. I don't think it's going to happen. And he said, okay, well, the thing that we've been talking about and we'll talk about later with FrameTech, he said, well, I'm going to talk to my wife. I think we want to put some money into that. So it was very interesting to be in that conversation where somebody is acknowledging what I'm telling them, that I've lost money, but the trust didn't change.
Right.
He knew that I was doing everything I could and was not quitting the fight. And that told me I'm on the right path, that it's people, it's just a different level of relationship. And so I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah. I think most people just appreciate trust and transparency and honesty and understand, especially high level investors, right? They know how hard some of these things are. They know, we call it the big boy or big girl clause. You know that you could lose your money going into stuff like this. And if you don't want to take that risk, then you better keep all of those eggs in your basket. But the second they leave your basket and you're trusting somebody else to watch them, there's risks that go along with that. Now, great plan, great team, great product, whatever it may be, can, you know, mitigate a lot of that risk. But at the end of the day, we all know nothing is bulletproof. So you went from zero to seven figures, then to negative net worth. Then obviously you went through what seemed like a rocket ship of an opportunity over the course of the last few years. Talk about what did that grit, that discipline, that re-engagement with this vision beyond EQRP that led you into your next opportunity?
Here's the thing. When I really think about the whole package, and I'll roll it out a little bit, but really thinking about it, what was I doing that led to everything that has happened and to this moment in time where it looks like almost like an overnight success or something that people go, yeah, I wish I could have that. I think what started it was I was asking, how do I help people free themselves from financial bondage? And that was the why. Mm. And this gets talked about a lot with Simon Sinek and different people asking you, figure out your why first. But that was the thing. It wasn't me saying, okay, how am I going to make money? That was me circa in my 20s, in the early 2000s. How am I going to make another $1 million? This one, all the millions were an offshoot. And it was asking that question. It really started with giving people control of their retirement. And then over the few years of doing that, I saw people that were like, cool, I got control, but now what do I do? And so it evolved into a question that was asked on a ski lift. How my partner and I were talking, how could we help people? How can we further help people? How can we serve our community? Because this community they trusted us. We worked our asses off for them. And so we said, well, let's go find niches that we can deliver real value. And that's where Vitruvian was really the brainchild of that was in Telluride. And it was finding another way to serve people that was part of our core. It wasn't some offshoot out in the middle of nowhere. It was literally part of this ecosystem that worked together with the retirement space. And so that's what we did. We went out to people and said, hey, we have an idea. And what do you think? And people said, yeah, we like you. We trust you. We want to be a part of this ship. And to be really candid, that first ship looked really good for a minute. And we pivoted. We went from our original space thinking we were going to do self-storage and we were going to do metals inside of it, gold and silver. And we pivoted pretty quick into crypto. And we looked like geniuses because our fund, instead of returning, 10, 12, 15, 17%, it was up like 40% the first 8 months. And so, of course, we look, like geniuses until crypto took a winter break. And then all of a sudden, our liquidity dropped by 30, 40%. And we went, oh, dang. So then, meanwhile, self-storage is going through the launching and all those and people are making tons of money. And so people in our community are saying, what happened? You guys were so smart. Now you're so dumb. And we're like, look, we are looking for a great deal. Our biggest focus is making sure we're protecting your capital. So yes, we see a lot of people making money. We're not seeing the deals that make sense that we feel safe with. So we held tight. And it is hard, Matt, to sit there with capital and just sitting, waiting while other people are making money. And that was part of the maturity of being willing to wait, being on the sidelines and not forcing anything just because other people were doing it. So waiting and then looking at other deals. We brought a few different deals into people from partners that we thought were good guys. And one of the things we learned in that space was there's a big difference between controlling a deal and just participating and not having control. And the ones that we didn't control, we learned real fast that it has 100% to do with the integrity of the piece of people that are actually driving it. And we realized we had partnered up with some people that didn't have very much integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a challenging one for sure. I have experienced that on, one or two deals before, right? And when your reputation is on the line, when you're a steward and a fiduciary to somebody else's capital, and it's one thing if, you're in the driver's seat with both hands on the steering wheel, you can live and die on your own sword, right? But when you're living and dying on somebody else's sword that, portrays one thing, and then obviously as time plays out, another, a result is a response of maybe a lack thereof of what they said they were going to do, it becomes pretty tough because there's blowback on you guys. So real fast to back up a little bit, because I want people to understand going from zero to nine figures in a relatively, like, what would you say that time frame was? 4 or 5 years? 5 years?
It was 5.5 years.
5.5 years. So you're sitting on the ski slope. The idea, talk about how you took that idea and began the inception and creation of it and what that really looked like to pour a foundation for a nine-figure business.
Well, it was asking the question, what does the market want? What do our people want? We know we've built some trust, and that's the first thing. And that takes time and it's hard building trust, building relationships. We've got this community. of a certain size. At that point, there was about 800 people in the community. And we thought, okay, what can we do and to serve? And it could have been, hey, they all need pencils. So let's go build pencils. Asked the question. It doesn't really matter what it is. It just matters what people need. And then you go get it and then you bring it to them. I mean, that's literally the secret of $1 billion. Figure out what people need, go get it, bring it to them. And it's very simplistic, but it's actually reality. That's what happens. And so it was going and then trying something and not worrying about whether we were going to be wrong, like willing to try and deliver. And that was really how it started. And we didn't really necessarily have this vision of 9 figures. We had a vision of helping somebody invest their money in something that we could create value doing. It wasn't like a typical Wall Street thing where you try to convince people to give you money and then you sit on it and you don't do anything for the next 20 years except for play golf and then you get your fees. Like that, this was a different vision because there was such deep trust and we wanted to do something different. We wanted to create institutional quality investments for normal everyday Americans that were looking for something outside of the Wall Street roller coaster. That was the vision. And then a long-term thing. It wasn't about going and making some quick money. Our original fund was a 20-year fund. That's how we structured it. This was like a lifetime marriage with investors, we're going to flip an apartment over 3 years. So our vision already started off with a deep relationship really for the rest of our lives. Yeah. I think that's a huge difference with what most of what we see out there.
Was that an evergreen fund?
It was actually the idea was a 20-year. We expected we would go through a 20-year cycle. Okay. We didn't want to say it was evergreen forever. It was a $10 million fund. So it was specific in its number and its time frame, but 20 years is kind of forever in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
it's a long ass time. That's a generation. So that was the thinking. It was build something different. It was not a in and out in 5 years. It was 20 years. And it was to give people a way to start thinking about how they could create this perpetual freedom. Because if you go flip something and make a bunch of money, you've seen this. A lot of people make a bunch of money and they're like, great, now what do I do? Like, I don't redeploy. I'm not free.
So yep, you're only as good as your last deal when you know, you got to keep that train rolling. So really your guys' model was to raise a bunch of capital for a fund. You guys were the fund managers, essentially. Yep. And you guys decided to deploy that capital into what investment assets that you felt would generate the great, safe, you know, stable returns for your investors.
So the idea we thought, and I still think this is a great asset class, was mini storage. And it was called the M&M Fund. And it was about mini storage and metals, gold and silver, because we like the stability. I have decades of experience in metals, even from before I was born with my dad. It's in my DNA. With his company that he started back in the early 70s. And so we said, okay, what is this? Well, mini storage has metal garages and metals have metal. So like, let's go for this. Like this will be fun. And it was a different blend than we'd seen before. So, I mean, that's we started in that space. And then we almost immediately, we started to see this energy in the self-storage space, a lot more money coming into it. We saw assets moving up. So we were chasing things and getting turned down and the numbers stopped making sense. And meanwhile, we were starting to dig deeper into the crypto space. And we said, well, while we have this cash, let's make sure that we're being a good steward of it while we're looking for the asset that we're holding long-term.
Yeah.
So we did what managers are supposed to do. We made a decision to move it. And that looked really smart. In the first 8 months, and it was pretty amazing. We felt really smart. We felt like we were geniuses, but we caught timing like a lot of people do. It had nothing to do with our intellect. But the thing is, it's easy to make a decision, but then getting out at the right time is also the other side of this. And so we wrote the thing up and wrote it down, and now we're back to neutral, which is interesting. And that's where it stuck. And so we had to be willing to go to everybody and say, here's what we did. Here's the choices we made. And we made a very interesting decision in that space. We haven't ever said this publicly. We just told our investors, but we ended up saying, okay, we made these choices. And my partner, David, and I decided that we were going to make people whole, that if we didn't get the original asset, by the end of 2024, we were going to close it down and make people whole, which at the time had the potential of us writing several million dollars out of pocket. I've never heard of anybody doing that, saying, look, we just couldn't get anything done right. So we're down, but you're not going to pay for it. We felt like that was the right thing to do because these people trusted us early. And so we wanted to do the right thing.
So talk about scaling. What did the, you know, to kind of fill in the gaps, what did the 0 to 100 million in growth look like, to put some numbers and context for people that understand this world on, you know, where you guys were able to really build and grow yourselves as the fund managers?
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Our sponsor today is Uplift Desks, creators of the best office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. Visit upliftdesk.com/mindcast for 5% off your order. And if you sit all day while you work and you've never tried a desk that can transition between sitting and standing, this is a complete game changer for you. My standing desk is by Uplift Desk. It's what I use every day to record the show, to do my office work. And I gotta say, the transition from sitting all day to standing while I work at various times throughout the day has really made a noticeable difference. When I'm standing, I notice that my energy is up. I'm way more focused and productive. I'm an alert, and I even have a little standing treadmill under my desk now, which allows me to get some extra steps in while plugging away on calls and work. It keeps the blood flowing throughout the day, which we all know can reduce all types of inflammation, different health risks, repetitive strain. And I noticed that my posture has drastically improved since switching to Uplift Desk as well, because I'm not hunched over a computer all day. And while there's a lot of options out there, the reason I chose Uplift Desk is because of the quality. It doesn't wobble, it's completely stable, it's built to last. And you can tell based on the materials that they use, and they are customizable too. Uplift Desk lets you build your custom dream desk by choosing from over 100 desktop choices and hundreds of accessories, so you can build the perfect workspace for yourself using their fun to use desk configurator. Now, once you have your desk designed and ordered, they ship the same day. You get free shipping. They do free returns with free return shipping. And the best part is they have an industry-leading 15-year warranty that covers the complete desk, which to me was a big deal. And it shows that they stand behind their product. Now, to get yours, go to upliftdesk.com/mindcast for 5% off your order. That's upliftdesk.com/mindcast to get 5% off your entire order.
So it's a combination of businesses that have scale from the community. So it's whether it's Facebook or anything else, as you build, and you know this from building communities, the network effect. Network effect, when you have more and more people involved, they do more things, it creates more value. There's just more value in the enterprise when you have more people. So if you can serve more people and build a community, there's inherent value there. It's not just about, I think a lot of people mistake that a business is valued based on its bottom line, that you just multiply the bottom line by a multiple of 4 or 6 or 10, and that's what it's worth. And that is not true anymore. You've got to look at deeper, the network, the community. And so these communities that were built with EQRP, with our, we call it the Badger Tribe, the Badger Nation, the Honey Badger is our spirit animal, so badger thing. And these different, the Gold Company, and ultimately the other things that we built with FrameTech, each of these things got progressively bigger. So there's value for each of these businesses. And it had to do with the people that were coming in, the value of the revenue, as well as just them in a business. So when we get these businesses appraised, or if we were to sell them, there is a value of all the people in these communities. And so part of this is these businesses that were, they have a community. And part of it is we kept expanding and stretching ourselves. So ultimately, FrameTech, that enterprise right now has a current valuation of $500 million, and it didn't exist 30 months ago. So that, and having a part of that, when you bring things together and some people are like, you guys have the biggest balls. And I'm like, we just don't know any better. Like maybe, or maybe we're really stupid. But what we did is we were able to find, through years of relationships, find people that we were aligned with 100% integrity-wise, that had incredible industry experience. And then we brought our experience with the relationships and the capital. But this took freaking years and decades to build.
Yeah, right. The network is, I mean, those relationships don't happen overnight. That trust is not built overnight, right? So you guys were taking capital from the fund and seeding potential companies or buying in on equity of potential companies?
These were just our internal companies, retirement companies, companies, and it was literally organic from scratch, building these things up and through grit. And one of the things that I decided to do a number of years ago, after I stopped being afraid of hiring people, because when you've been burned by partners, when you've been burned by people, I think it's easy to go into a space like I did where you say, screw it, I don't trust people. People are just going to hurt me. And so I'll do it myself. And I did that for a while. And I was just burning out. And finally I said, all right, I need some help. And when I got some help, and then I realized I need to get ahead of this. So I started hiring and looking for people, and was fortunate because my partner, sort of a funny story, his wife worked at Lululemon. And so we ended up hiring out of her really successful franchise for years. And we hired a bunch of really great people, and they ended up being the core. We hired way before we needed the people. So we had people that had the experience inside. So we were able to build the infrastructure. And so we weren't investing in other companies. We were just building and grinding and putting all the money back in for a number of years. And then when the opportunity came up with Frametech, I mean, that was one of the biggest things that's ever happened to me. We had this community that was built with thousands of people, and we had years of trust. And so when we launched it, we had people saying, yeah. And so the first Frametech plant, we raised $40 million for that. And that's because we had built all this, you know, all that trust and all the relationship value. And again, it was years of doing it. Yeah. So That's really, it wasn't like 50 different things. We didn't seed things like, you know, Tim Ferriss move where he puts 25,000 like a VC. It was pretty narrow. And that's still valuable, I think, keeping things fairly narrow. Because if you spread everywhere, you're probably not going to do a whole lot. I mean, that's just reality.
Yeah. So talk about the liquidity aspect of how you guys, or how business owners, can think about creating value in assets, businesses, and what is your strategy around either how to leverage that or how to create liquidity through it? What have you guys done, you know, on your journey for kind of creating that success and growing the net worth, but also having, you know, the ability to move capital around and create some liquidity in the process?
So I think part of this is learning the balancing. This is like a tap dancing routine, that the balancing act with leverage and debt, and when you take money out and when you keep it back in. I've for years, the retirement company, I've put more money into it than I've taken out. So I've borrowed money and put it back in. So net, that company has cost me money, and I've invested in it. And people would say, well, that seems like a dumb business. And I would say, if that was the only thing I was ever going to do, it'd be a great charity. But what that was a way to start serving people and building a community. And so that was the key. The liquidity came from other things. It's, you know, things happen, whether it's, you know, a gold company, which, by the way, is the worst possible business you could ever get into because the margins are like 2%. I mean, this is like terrible. If you make $100 million in revenue in a year, you basically keep the lights on. It's horrible. But the liquidity thing, I think one of the keys is being careful about how quick you force liquidity and being willing to be patient, because liquidity happens almost like an accident. Like there's an event that comes, whether it's an exit of some sort, or there's a refinance, or you just start, the cash flow spigot turns on. Like with Frametech, the first year it's in motion where it's actually producing, it's cash flow positive. And then the second year, the thing produces $15+ million net a year. And by the third year, it's 30 to 40 million in net from one plant. So I think a lot of this has to do with patience. You know, you and I hear this all the time. People are looking for cash flow, and they're looking for it right now.
Yeah,
and that's, I get it. But man, if you want real cash flow, and you're willing to let something be built, the cash flow is so much bigger than saying I want it immediately, because everybody wants it, and the amount of capital chasing immediate cash flow forces the yields to be so low that you're basically getting crumbs. And if you can wait 3 or 4 years, you can actually have, like, the Frametech is returning the investors, when it turns on, it returns them 30 to 40% cash on cash a year. So but that's because people are patient. They wait 3+ years. That is a huge difference in what most people are doing in the investment world.
Yeah. Obviously different risk profiles, different cash flow needs, different lifestyle, different points of where they're at in their life, right? All of those things tie into that. But like you said, you know, most people don't have the ability or patience to wait for cash flow when they part with their dollars. So that is something to keep in mind for any investors. Now, I know you talk a lot about the importance of your investors, bringing in new investors, how you communicate and, you know, maintain that cadence of trust, of information, of transparency. How are you finding new investors and how are you maintaining and, you know, cultivating and growing those relationships once they're in your ecosystem?
Well, I mean, a big part of the growth is in the beginning, it's brutal because nobody knows about you. And so you just have to go into the wild and then convince somebody to give you a chance at proving that you're trustworthy. And so the very beginning, there is no overnight. And I think a lot of people have been out in the wild and they have some social media and then people go, I like the personality. And then they raise money, but there's no real relationship there that's really deep. It's just kind of surface level. So I think finding some way to serve people, like with the retirement space, doing something, being showing people, not just telling them, but actually showing them. Nowadays, it's so much about the referral. So people are referring their kids and their, you know, their cousins and their neighbors. They're like, you got to see what these people are doing. And they have years of track record. So people leverage off of that. To me, that's so much more valuable than somebody just, I mean, I love it when they hear me on a show, like people get to hear me here and they're like, okay, that's, you know, that's cool. I want to learn more about this. But when somebody says, look, I've been working with this team for the last 2 or 3 years. And not only do I think they do a good job, but I really trust them because they are open. They don't just tell me the good stuff. They tell me all the stuff. And these guys work their butts off and they put me first. And so hearing that from other people, that's what drives people to say, all right, you're the team that I want to participate with. You're going to look after my money and you're going to care about it even more than your money. And that's what makes people say, okay, I want to be a part of this. We're doing an event here in Arizona in April where we're bringing everybody out and we're having a big party at the manufacturing plant. And
nice.
So it's physically bringing people together. And then, you know, it's like fellowship and food and music and showing them you're a part of this, man. You're the fuel that put this thing together. So when they're under this 2.5-acre facility, which is 111,000 square feet, they're inside, they see all this machinery. They're like, man, my dollars helped make this happen. It's going to employ a couple hundred people. It's helping to solve the housing crisis. That feels totally different than I got a statement from Schwab that tells me my stocks went up 3%.
Yeah.
Like it's a completely different world.
Yeah, totally. I was thinking about all the different books that you have authored and, you know, I'd be mistaken if I didn't tap into some of, you know, the nuggets and wisdom that you have. What have been some of the, maybe a couple of your kind of big talking points in the books that you feel apply now more than ever to either business owners or investors?
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
In the book I wrote in 2012 called Reinvented Life, the very last chapter is called Stillness. And I think we have less stillness than at any point in history. I think there's more noise and there's more friction and there's more chaos. And we've got everybody yelling at us to pay attention, whether it's on Facebook or it's in some news media, or we've got our own internal fear around not having enough money and because everything costs more, and we're like, there's noise. Yeah. And you can't think if there's noise. Like we were working with one of our, one of the investments, this technology deal that we've been doing, working with one of the assets inside of it. And it was an interesting conversation. This is just yesterday. And the conversation that came up was around the CEO of this one company, and they didn't have cash. They didn't have the people. And so he didn't have time to think. And I was like, yeah, you're screwed. If you don't have time to think and you don't have a place of stillness, you've got to find that. Whether it's like, for me, I moved out into Northern Arizona where I'm close to nature. I can go on a hike. I can just walk out my door and I'm in the woods. And that's different for everybody. But having that place where you're not responding. Matt, I heard a great way to think about this. Our brains are meant to process things that are not meant to hold information. There's a million things that can hold information. Yep. Our brains need to be able to think about things, not try to store them. And so finding that today, if you have it, all sorts of epiphanies happen, all sorts of magic happens, asking those questions and then just letting the things flow. But I don't think most people have it. They're too busy chasing everything or responding to everything.
Yeah. What are your practices for how you keep that stillness or quietness in your world, knowing that, I mean, for a guy that has so many businesses, so many investors, so many things going on, how have you found a way to create that balance or counterbalance, that stillness, the things that are really important for keeping you at peak performance and optimized?
So a couple of things. I force myself to make sure I'm out in nature without screens. And it's funny because I still want to track my walks and everything on my freaking phone, and it's another damn screen. Yeah. So it's getting out into, I look at nature as a place of truth. Whenever you see animals or you see a tree, there's nothing lying. There's nothing being manipulated. It's all real. And I think there's so much manufactured manipulation with humans that's a nice counterbalance. So that's a fairly easy one for most people. The one thing that I do all the time, every day, is I think on paper and I use pencil and paper, and I'm just writing and I'm thinking and I'm letting my body get stuff out of my head and just wandering. And then, like with the book that you put together that I got from you, thinking about my life and planning my life and doing it in that book on paper. So big shout out to what you created, which is very, very cool for people. It's a practice of getting it out of your head and then being able to look at it and then work with it. It's your vision. It's your life. And I don't think most people are conscious. I think that they're just reacting. I mean, how many times have we heard, well, we'll see what happens? I'm like, what kind of plan is that? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Go make it happen. At least be able to see it. And so that practice, it's a very conscious practice of being real with what you're thinking about it and then being able to look at it and have it look back at you.
That's why I created the Rich Life Planner. I love hearing that you're using the Rich Life Planner. You know, shout out to everybody else that's out there using the Rich Life Planner. If you haven't checked it out, check out millionairemindcast.com in the store. But I mean, to me, it's not some magic silver bullet. It's like you said, carving out time and creating a space that you have a framework that allows you to create clarity, because people like us, it's never a lack of action. That's not the issue. It's a lack of taking action on the right things that are truly aligned and strategically. You've taken the time to plan out how you think you can get there. And then it's just constant reflection, tweaking, optimizing along the way. There is no silver bullet to the success. I think what I have found in the most successful people I know is they just have really good frameworks that create space and awareness and time for them to do work on the things that matter most. And then they just consistently work in those spaces.
Yeah, that you just made me think about something, working in those spaces. And how do you do that? You have the ability to say no. And when I say no, it's saying no to almost everything. Yeah. That's the difference. When people will say, well, I'm either stuck or I'm not getting any traction, my question is, what are you saying no to? And that's kind of a stun grenade. Like, well, I don't know what do you mean? Well, the reality is most of us just kind of go along and we have legacy obligations. We have things. We don't actually think, does this thing, this request, whether it's from a friend or it's an activity or I don't know, it's a chocolate cake in front of us, what's our framework? Like, what are our rules for the people that are going to be in our lives, the messages we're going to take, the food we're going to eat? Like, do we have any rules? Do we have a framework? If we have a framework, it's actually very easy to say yes or no. And what you realize when you have a very, very focused vision on your life, it's easy to say no because most things don't fit in that vision, because your vision, when you have a vision, is generally not like the masses. The masses say yes to everything.
Yeah.
The people that we look up to, that you think Elon Musk says yes to everything? No. He says no to almost everything. He's like, I'm obsessed with my thing. Like Grant's book, Be Obsessed or Be Average.
Yeah.
That is true, man. Yeah. Boba. Like you got to be saying no, 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 no. It opens space for the yes. And that's where the magic happens, man. You got time and energy, but it's hard because saying no hurts people's feelings, you know? Mm-hmm. Nobody likes hurting people's feelings unless you're a sociopath. But you have to realize that your dreams are important and people care about your dreams. I don't think most people, like your parents, your kids, your friends, want to see you fail. But they don't realize what they're doing when they're trying to, when they're trying to get you to do things that are outside of your vision. They don't realize that's actually helping you fail. And I don't think that they want to do that to you, but you got to be stronger, I think.
Yeah, 100%. So talking about what the next, kind of sprint in your world looks like, what is it that I'm going to hear about when we reconnect next time? What are you guys getting after? What are you most excited about? And what, you know, what is the probability in your mind of these things coming true?
So there's a 100% probability of
that
FrameTech going online. And that's part of a legacy. That's also part of the excitement of being alive, being in the middle of it. So it's not like I don't have this plan for $1 billion endowment when I'm dead. Like the things that I'm excited about now are something I'm practicing. It's called radical generosity. And so as I'm doing this work with FrameTech, when we talk about it a year from now, I'm going to tell you we're online, we're producing. We've got builders all over the country saying, hey, when are you going to do it here? We've got 6 locations and we're trying to figure out how we're navigating this. It's a different problem. And I'm going to say I had about 250 different people that were shocked and awed because I did something that maybe didn't make a difference to me, but was radical. It's like when you hand somebody that gives you a coffee, you hand them a $100 bill. Is that going to change your financial life? No, but it might actually change their whole world. And so those moments of radical generosity, I think the more that we do those, the couple things happen. You have huge impacts on people and you start to really open yourself up. And when you're open, you're able to receive all of this amazingness, whether it's inspiration or abundance. And so that practice, I was terrible at that for a long time. And I realized I really missed out because I was too busy holding and taking and keeping and letting go. It's amazing how much this flood happens. And this is biblical. This is not news. I didn't come up with any of this. It's just, I'm practicing this. So we're going to talk about that. That'll be as much of the story about FrameTech and my life as FrameTech is, because it's that impactful. The generosity, we need more people being more generous. We don't need more people trying to figure out how they're going to keep and consume. I think that changes the world as much as FrameTech does. It's just that ripple effect of the generosity.
Well, I know a lot of people are going to want to follow along. They're going to want to check out what you got going on. Where's the best place for them to learn more about you, FrameTech, and any of the other stuff that you guys got going on?
I think everything is going to start at FrameTech because that's the biggest rocket. That's the most exciting. And then you kind of go from there. So FrameTech, and this is FrameTech with a C. There's FrameTech.com. And you can watch this story, watch it unfold, watch this thing go online, watch our robots. We've got robots named Kuka 1 and Kuka 2 from Europe that are part of the story. We've named them. We're going to have them do crazy stuff. Like Elon has his Teslas doing weird things with light shows and robots. Yep. And thing. Our robots are going to do cool things too. So look out. Like we're going to give Elon a run for his money with our crazy ideas too.
I love it, man. Well, one, it's always great connecting with you, brother. I love how big you think. I love how big you execute. I appreciate and honor your transparency, your honesty, you know, all the stuff that you share that honestly, most people don't give people a window into. And I know that it's going to help a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of business owners, a lot of investors along the way. So as always, Damian Lupo, thanks for coming on the show.
Matt, thanks for having me. It's good to see you again.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you did, all I ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're also going to get entered in to win a $100 gift card. Don't forget to share this episode out with somebody else that may need to hear it or may get some value from what was talked about in today's interview. And for those of you who are really looking to accelerate your wealth building journey, you want to unlock more financial freedom, you want to get more time back, or maybe you just want to level up your life, your business, your finances, be sure to head over to MillionaireMindcast.com and check out all the amazing products and resources that we have for our Millionaire Mindcast family, whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, downloads and checklists, the Rich Life Planner for those of you looking to take your goal setting and productivity to the next level. We've got all kinds of great, valuable tools. So be sure to check those out at MillionaireMindcast.com. And last but not least, if you're not on my weekly text letter and you want to be the first to know of exclusive updates and offers, in addition to behind the scenes access to a lot of the stuff that I'm doing, that I'm investing in, be sure to join by texting the word notes to 844-447-1555. With that being said, thanks for listening today. Until next time, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.